Welcome to a new episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, it's an episode that's been in the can for a while now. It is Terminator Dark Fate. Yes, they tried to do another Terminator. Nobody saw it, but we had a great, fun conversation about it. But it was a little towards the end of the film's life cycle and decided to hold it for the VOD release, which it is now out on VOD. It's kind of a shame this movie flopped so hard because it was pretty damn good. You know, they tried really hard to pass it off, as they always do when a new Terminator comes out, as the best Terminator since T2. And it really is. It's probably the best Terminator since T2. But I just think nobody cares anymore, unfortunately. I'm sorry to say to Arnold and James Cameron and everyone else involved. But this was a fun movie. It has a lot of great things going for it. It just, no one cares. But we care, and we had a great time talking about it. With me for this one is returning co-host Brian Garth from the band Black Camaro. We actually recorded this one. It's a very unique one. First of all, he edited it, so that's different for the show. And we recorded it in a private room at a library on this machine that he built that he will talk about in the intro of the episode. So let's get over to that here in a second. I do want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, all the major podcast apps. And of course, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. So with that said, let's get into this conversation about Terminator Dark Fate.
Well, I'm rolling.
Yeah? Yeah. We could just jump right in.
Sure. How do you normally do it?
Oh, we normally jump right in, but I mean, this is a little different. I mean, we're
in a weird place.
We're at the West Sahara Library.
Sure.
Should we tell people where we are?
Yeah, I mean, it's not live, so it's not like they're going to be able to come here and bother us.
We're at the West Sahara Library right now, and we were recording on this
Sahara West.
Sahara West, that's right. This beautiful contraption that Brian Garth has brought with him. Why don't you tell people about this thing, the Monarch?
Essentially, what it is a digital interface connected to a computer, connected to a monitor, connected to a keyboard in a nice wood shell that looks like a vintage stage piano.
Yeah, I mean, this thing looks like if David Rosen ever started doing live shows of his music, this would just be the perfect setup for me.
Yeah, because it's a MIDI keyboard with sample pads.
And a computer.
And a computer and a digital interface. However, we played our first show, Tom and I, as Black Monarch, essentially Black Camaro songs, but just the two of us using the Monarch. And we realized right away that it was limited, the two inputs as well as the four outputs. It's a very limited situation. So I traded out the 2i4, which is a slightly smaller unit, for a third generation Focusrite 18i8, which is essentially 18 in, but on the box itself is four XLR in on the front.
Right, you got to use the ADAT or whatever.
Four quarter inch on the back, and then there's an ADAT toss link on the rear as well, where you can add 8 more from my Octopre, as well as a SpeedIF in where you can add 2 more.
Gotcha.
Right? So total of 18 in, and technically it's 8 out.
What do you think it would have cost to build something like this back in the days of Terminator 2?
Back in the days of Terminator 2,
91,
this
right?
would have cost about $15,000, maybe $20,000 to build something this sophisticated.
This is a heavy piece of kit. There's a lot here.
Right. So, I mean, and you also have to think in the 90s, digital conversion was just garbage.
Right,
So during Terminator 2, anyway, so yeah, we're at right now where we are live at Sahara West Library recording into the Monarch.
Yeah.
It's a suitcase. It's a big wooden shell suitcase that you can, it has a handle that you can carry it around.
Did you look like Arnold carrying the thing of flowers as you were walking in here?
Yeah, I made sure that I wore Ray-Bans so that my leather motorcycle jacket.
Yes.
I actually stole off of a guy at a bar on my way here.
So we're going to be talking about Terminator Dark Fate today.
Terrible name.
Just really bad name. You know, before we do start jumping into some conversation about that, one last thing about your beautiful piece of equipment right here. Monarch does sound, I thought about this on the ride over here, like the future name of a new corporation that takes over in a reboot of Terminator one day.
Right, which is interesting because it's actually based on a 1976 Mercury Monarch.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when we came time to name this thing, I asked Tom for some suggestions. And instead of telling me, he just sent me an eBay link to the 76 Mercury Monarch
that he was selling
metal logos.
Oh,
you know, or plastic. What, I think they're metal, whatever. But you know, he didn't tell me a name. He just sent me an eBay link.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, here you go.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that works.
Go
so I bought them and emblazoned them across the front and rear of the Monarch keyboard.
It works.
Yeah. Right. It does kind of, I mean, it's better than Legion.
Legion.
Right? Legion.
Which is also a car, isn't it?
I don't know, but isn't it a TV show?
Yeah, definitely a TV show.
For those of you who haven't seen the film, Legion is the new Skynet.
Yes.
Essentially.
Skynet did, it failed, but machines still rose and machines still sent something back. And
right. So overall, did you like it, Terminator Dark Fate?
I like Dark Fate. There are things about it I didn't like. I'm sure we're going to be talking about a lot of those during this. But overall, I did like it. I think it's a shame that it failed so hard. I mean, at this point that we're doing this episode, it's been out about 2 weeks and I'd be surprised if it's still in the theaters next week. That's how bad this thing seems to be doing.
That's unfortunate because it really was fun. It really is good. And I don't mean that in like a, you know, I mean, there were some fun things about all of the Terminator sequels. No, I mean, it was pretty badass, like nonstop action. Had this film come out directly after T2 without the three between it, even if it had come out today, it would have been amazing.
Yeah.
People would have been mind fucked by it because they really went all out or all in.
Mm.
And this has to do with my first puzzle piece, actually.
Sure.
It's kind of a soft reboot,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's like a new thing, right? The soft reboot versus the total remake or whatever.
Sure.
It's a soft reboot and much in the way that The Force Awakens was a soft reboot,
mm-hmm.
where The Force Awakens, you could say this part of it, this part of it, this part of it, this part of it. They were all kind of borrowed from right? The original Star Wars film. But what they did that was brilliant about it was they took the original characters kind of and integrated them into the story to you know, bring a familiarity to it.
Sure.
Right? Like a good feeling. And that really worked because with the prequel Star Wars films, episode 1 through 3, they were just kind of like, meh, like none of the characters were the same and it didn't feel the same at all. It didn't have the same feeling as the original Star Wars trilogy. Whereas I felt like with The Force Awakens, they returned somewhat of that original feeling, the way it felt, the vibe of it, right?
Yeah, you need those people that you're familiar with all those years.
Right. And Harrison Ford brought it. Chewbacca brought it. Even Princess Leia brought it, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever she was, General Leia.
Right.
She even brought that familiarity, right? Unfortunately for audience members, there was a limited amount of C-3PO and R2-D2 in it, which just like, oh my God, if they'd have made another one of those like episode 2 where R2-D2's flying around with jet packs and they're, you know, in a droid factory. Oh dear. You know, like,
just wait for the next one. I think he's coming.
Anyway, so Dark Fate reminded me a lot of The Force Awakens in that regard, where in this one, they brought back Arnold in kind of a clever way. But the main connection to The Force Awakens was the Sarah Connor role. They brought back Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor. But also, it was basically Terminator 1.
Mm.
You know, it's the original Terminator film where they come in to get the new, quote, Sarah Connor.
Sure.
Which, you know, as you find out, is actually the new John Connor, but kind of an amalgamation of both of those things, right? Kind of like the new character, Danny Ramos or whatever, she was John Connor and Sarah Connor.
Right.
In the same kind of character, right? But the savior.
Mm.
The good thing, though, is that Sarah Connor doesn't so much have like the burden in this film of being the Lady Madonna character, like the mother of Jesus, basically, right? She doesn't have that dragging her down, although that does motivate her. But, you know, as we know, John Connor went kaput at the very beginning, which I thought was fucking badass.
Yeah, we should talk about that for a second.
That made me feel really ill for a minute. Like, whoa, what?
Some people are really mad about that. I thought it was awesome. Some people seem to think it invalidates Terminator 2. Like it completely does away with anything that you've built up in your mind about this story. And I don't think so. I think, you know, things happen, progression in stories happen.
Life happens.
Yeah, life happens. And yeah, why not that be the thing that eventually happens?
Star Wars warning. Those were the same people who complained about Luke Skywalker becoming a hermit and blah, 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 blah. The beginning of Terminator Dark Fate, where John Connor meets his end, in the timeline of things, happened probably like a year later after T2. So yeah, all right. You know, he didn't have a lot between the end of T2 and his death, but that's one story. Mm-hmm. This is the continuation of that story where they stopped him from being necessary anyway by destroying Skynet, right? In T2, they completely put an end to the necessity of him surviving, right? Mm. Like he didn't have to survive because they ended Cyberdyne, they ended Skynet.
There's no battle with Skynet. There's no need for the general.
There's no need for John Connor, the legend or whatever, right? And it's kind of interesting how that informs the Sarah Connor character in the new film. She just looks like her whole life was pointless or something. You know what I'm saying? Like everything about her life was pointless. Although you do come to find that, you know, in her own little world, she's been killing Terminators for the last 30 years.
Killing Terminators and then getting blackout drunk the rest of the time.
Right. Getting drunk and killing Terminators in that order.
Well, I think just to go right off of that puzzle piece, the recent Halloween also kind of soft reboot thing, ignoring half of the other movies and just, you know, picking up from where they want to, taking the pieces that they want to take of the classics and continuing the story from there.
Right after Halloween 1, the original Halloween, right?
Right.
She's not Michael Myers' sister.
Right. We're not taking any of that crap. We're just jumping to a point in the story that we want to cut off at and continuing from there. I really truly think this is going to be something we're going to see more of in the future from more movies, more sequels. I think they're going to just randomly decide, oh no, the real story continues from that one point. All the other ones is another timeline or whatever. And we're just going to tell our own story, our own version of what would have happened after that point. And I mean, if you've got the original people back on board, it's like, why not, I suppose? And I think this is a great version of that. I can't really speak to Halloween because I don't even know if I've ever seen the other Halloween movies other than the original and maybe one of the Rob Zombie reboots. And
so you're saying specifically that you predict that movies that have had multiple sequels, the new trend is going to be the new version is going to erase all those bunk sequels and just be a continuation of the original film.
I think it'll happen.
You definitely would have to find a property where people feel that the sequels were less than.
Yeah.
They could easily erase.
I could see them doing it with Jurassic Park. That would be one that would be appropriate to erase some of those sequels.
They are kind. It seems like they may be headed that direction with the casting of the new film that's supposedly coming out, where it's all three of their mains from the original film teaming up with the two mains of the new film.
Which is interesting too. But what do you got for your next piece though?
Okay, so for my next piece, I don't know, maybe this is something that I've just missed 1,000 times, and it first came to me when I played the game Uncharted 3. Mm. Uncharted video games are known for how cinematic they are. We've actually gone over this before on a previous podcast. I think I used Uncharted as a puzzle piece before, but Uncharted 3 specifically, Drake's Deception, as well as the film The Mummy, Tom Tom Cruise film, The Mummy.
Okay.
It seems to be a common trope now to have a cargo plane action sequence, right? Where it's not just about being on a cargo plane, but it's about that cargo plane fucking going down, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, this shit is going down and we're going to be flopping around in the back of this thing as it's going down until it actually goes down, right? Uh-huh. And the closest I would say would... Although The Mummy was more, it was a little different. Like, it wasn't so much like a shoot 'em up action sequence. Drake's Deception or Uncharted 3 is probably the closest because of the beats, like the timing of everything, how it rolls around. While this plane is going down, they're dodging like boxes of cargo in the back and hiding behind it. Oops. Oh, look at that. That guy got knocked out the back by flying cargo. What do you know, right? And all the way up to the end where they have to use some sort of parachuting. Yeah. Not a parachute on their back, mind you, but some other thing that has like an oversized parachute on it to land in a safe area. It seems like, oh, great, we're safe. But oh, no, now we're not. Now we're in another situation, right?
Yeah.
Like, now we're in the water in this dam in Terminator Dark Fate, where, which was actually, I thought was probably one of the cooler fight sequences, like a fucking Terminators fighting underwater. What, man? That shit was dope. And I don't know, like, I think a lot of the things they did in that film, they're going to go way underrated, like way like unnoticed, because people are just not going to notice the film. They're not going to watch it. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I would say Uncharted 3, The Mummy / every film that has a cargo plane action sequence. I mean, come on, name one.
Well, it's so funny you're bringing this up, because that was actually one of my puzzle pieces.
Right.
But for my example, I was going to use, I have three more, although I honestly can't even remember for sure.
So there's at least five.
Yeah, I know. But
at least six, technically.
I'm pretty sure it happened in Hobbs and Shaw.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, no. It did. It was in a Fast and Furious movie. Where they
Fast and Furious 7.
Fucking parachute out in the cars or whatever.
Yeah, I think that was 7. Whatever one had Charlize Theron. I think it was that one. Also, didn't it happen in Mission Impossible Fallout also?
You know what? I tried to conjure that one up. I don't think so. I think the action sequence of that was him getting on it. But what you might be thinking about is the scene where they were doing the Halo jump.
Right. But there's like fighting and things happening at the back of the opening, and nobody seems to be getting affected by the fact that they're standing outside of an open airplane.
Right, right. They're just standing up on this thing that could technically be sucking them out.
But right.
No. right. You're probably right. I did think about Fallout. I really did, because, you know, the whole him grabbing onto the plane thing and all that shit. That was actually the fifth one, right?
Yeah, that was Rogue Nation, where he's hanging off the plane. Yeah, I mean, but you're right, though. Plane sequences are big right now when it comes to effects-heavy movies.
They, what's interesting about that is, I don't know if they, Tim Miller, right? The director of the film.
Yeah.
Him being a special effects guy, he makes films from that perspective. Although I love action, films, I love special effects, I love all the sequences from Terminator. Terminator Dark Fate was one long special effect action sequence,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
And that's not to say it fell flat on story. I don't think it really did. I think it had some bonkers moments in the story that had they just omitted, it would have been way better of a film. But
absolutely.
It was an odd choice to do the cargo plane thing. They just needed to keep the action moving, and they needed to be able to get them from here to there. So they're like, how do we do it? A fucking cargo plane. Because it's like, how do we get this military, high-grade military device at the same time we need them to escape? I think there's just the action special effects creator mindset was
sure.
Like, oh, let's put them in this. And then they go right to the trope.
Come to think of it, I think Genesis had a plane scene too, a plane crash scene.
T3 definitely did.
Okay.
In fact, that was going to be my next piece, unless you wanted to tell us the rest of your, how many more of the cargo plane movies?
No, I just had those three. So Hobbs and Shaw, Mission Impossible, Fallout, and whichever Fast and Furious it was. I think it was 7.
Yeah. Okay. So two Fast and Furious movies, high octane action flicks, right? Yeah. They go to the cargo plane sequence. And there has to be at least a dozen more.
Oh yeah. It's the new in thing.
When we did the Mission Impossible one, we spent most of the time referencing older Mission Impossible films where they were paying homage to them or whatever. But I think that what they did with this film, and it's another part of me is kind of like a little upset that they're like, oh, this is all fresh. It's all new. It's a new idea, new concept, blah, blah, blah. Fuck those other movies. I feel like they mined those films hard as fuck for like the elements that worked and just integrated them into this film. I'll run down the list, but I'm going to go out on a limb and just ignore Genesis, because if Genesis was interesting, it was cool. Like, I liked that they showed the time travel and the future and all that. But for the most part, it was just like seeing how closely they could recreate the scenes from the original films and shit. And that just kind of bothered me a little bit.
Right.
In Terminator 3, the TX or Terminatrix, the female Terminator, if you want to say female Terminator, but whatever. They said, okay, so how are we going to step up? In T2, we made this liquid guy that was like, holy shit, that's so different from the original endoskeleton Terminator guy, right?
Yeah.
So for T3, they were like, well, how are we going to up that ante? Well, this is what we'll do. We'll take that liquid idea and then throw the skeleton underneath it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right. And they also, she also had the ability to like talk with technology. If you remember that at all,
she
could like lock into modern technology and like hotwire the robots and like she reprogrammed them, you know, but she was also able to like tap into systems, which was a kind of a new feature for the Terminator franchise, where when T2 came out, we really didn't have the internet. Nobody knew about that shit yet. So that wasn't like something that was like, ooh, that's creepy. Now, the new guy, you know, he's got his eyes and everything.
Yeah.
Drones, you know what I mean? Can tap into like the cameras on streetlights. And there were so many different things. Okay, so like another major thing that they did, they decided like, okay, well, we've had like male Terminators for so long. Let's add a female to the mix, right? Mm-hmm. Let's bring in a female Terminator. And they kind of borrowed from that and this new film by having Mackenzie Davis's character be a hybrid human. The main good guy from Salvation was also a half machine, if you remember correctly.
Right.
So he, and you know, of course you don't find out until the middle or something of the film, but Sam Worthington's character was really cool in theory, but just did not get fleshed out very well. Like, it didn't work as well as it could have.
Sure.
And I feel like with Mackenzie Davis's character, they really borrowed from that concept of the hero is actually a machine now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But they had to make her a little bit more human than Sam Worthington, who's just a guy who like stares at shit. You know what I mean? Like walking around with a trench coat staring at things. Mackenzie Davis was a badass.
She ruled in this.
Yeah,
I was really worried from the trailer. I thought she was going to be really lame.
I thought the whole film was going to be lame because of the trailer. I thought the whole, like, I'll be back when they put that in the trailer, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This movie looks so bad.
Yeah.
And those were some of the best things about it. Sarah Connor's one-liners, Mackenzie Davis's physicality, just like how her martial ability, I guess, like her ability to just beat the shit out of the new Terminator, the Rev 9.
Badass.
No,
she
kicked ass.
Better word.
She kicked ass. Yeah. So like, I feel like they borrowed a lot from those films, right? The Grace character, Mackenzie Davis, was kind of a cybernetic human, a la Sam Worthington from Salvation. Also, one big thing that they borrowed from T3, which might not even, you know, ring in people's minds when they watch it, but the inevitability of this AI future. T3, the whole purpose was it kind of just shot the whole there's no fate but what you make the idea to hell. The thing that Kyle Reese told Sarah Connor, then Sarah Connor told John Connor, and blah, 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 blah. There's no fate but what you make. But then in Terminator 3, the Terminator spells it out. He's like, you only stop the inevitable. You know, this is something that is going to happen. It was set in stone. You just slowed down the process.
Yeah.
So that movie kind of threw the whole there's no fate but what you make thing to hell. It was just like, no. This future is inevitable.
I never really thought about it until right now, but I think maybe that's part of the reason why people don't like these movies very much anymore, is they just don't like that kind of negative outlook.
Right. That and the three movies were
that were not very good.
That were not very good. They really burned people out on them. I actually talked to a Terminator quote in air quotes, Terminator fan who I was like, yeah, come see Dark Fate. He's like, I will not be fooled again. Thank you. Mm. I'm just like, damn. All right. It's like that. And I feel like a lot of people feel that way.
I find that so strange because I don't know. I mean, yeah, it is three bad ones in a row. I mean, not really bad. I like Terminator 3 and I didn't think Genesis was that bad. I hate Salvation though, but
I thought Genesis was worse than Salvation.
Nah, I'm the other way around. But that being said, it's only three movies over 15 years. I don't think it's like that common of a thing to get a bad Terminator movie. I don't understand why everybody's so burnt out on these.
Because I think the it's a testament to how badass the first two were.
That's possible. Yeah.
In particular, the second one is like
it's the best action movie ever made.
Right. Everybody's just like, oh my God, they just have these memories. Maybe it's rose-colored glasses. I don't know, because I actually recently watched T2 and it like 98% still holds up.
Yeah.
Some of the effects don't look as good as effects do these days, but the idea, the concepts, everything about it still really fucking holds up. So I think that that's probably what it is. You know what I mean? It's like the fact that none of them could compare to T2. None of them did. But you're also right. You are kind of onto something with that. In fact, it's the major thing, one of like, two or three major gripes I have about Dark Fate, and those are the only gripes I have, but they are major gripes, is that the whole time, like I said, they're borrowing this fate is inevitable thing from T3, but then they throw in the like pointless little speech about there is no fate but what you make, which is coming from the mouths of characters who have never met Kyle Reese, have never met John Connor, have never met anyone who's ever said it just like that. But it's like, oh, there's no fate but what you make, except for the fact that somehow fate put those exact words into your mouth. Geez, interesting. It's weird how they did that. Like all they had to do was just omit that shit, right?
Yeah.
Get rid of that. That is completely unnecessary. It drove me nuts how they spent the whole movie showing you how the future is inevitable. This is going to happen. And then for no fucking reason, they make the character look like a moron by saying some dumb shit like, there's no fate but what you make. Clearly, this is fate being like forced on you. Like you're not making this happen. This is some shit that is going to happen.
I think we're both in agreement that that's the worst part of the movie. Like that drags the movie down.
Right. That as well as anytime they go to the future.
Yeah.
And show
which that
Mackenzie Davis as a child and all that shit. I don't think that they really needed to do that. Although to stick with my, you know, puzzle piece of T3 and Salvation, one thing I noticed that was borrowed from Salvation was this idea of a very highly technological future military, right? That is fighting. The resistance is technologically advanced, right? Where when you watch the first two Terminator movies, aside from having maybe like pulse rifles or some shit, they're driving around in like 1982 Toyota Hiluxes with fucking steel panels welded to the side that are like flipping over and shit. It's just like, they look like some ragtag resistance, you know? Whereas Salvation brought the idea that, no, these people have fucking helicopters and they got like technology, man. They, you know what I mean? They're a well-oiled machine. They're just outnumbered by Terminators who can mass produce, you know?
Sure.
And they kind of borrowed from that for this film in their future. It was even more technologically advanced than the Salvation future showed us, right?
Yeah.
The Mackenzie Davis future, Grace, right?
Sure.
I don't think they ever said her last name, but Grace's future military force was highly technologically advanced. In fact, the plane or whatever that they were flying in, I thought it was a Terminator plane. I was like, what? And then they show them in it. And I'm like, oh, okay. Wow. So, you know, they had like a technological future, which I thought was good. Those parts were necessary. Mm-hmm. But showing her as like a kid in like 2023 or whenever the fuck it was supposed to be is like, what is the point of that? I don't
think it didn't pay off anything.
It didn't even need to exist.
Yeah.
We didn't need to know, like, we never saw John Connor like petting Kyle Reese as a boy's head in Terminator 1 for the Kyle Reese character to pay off, right? We never even saw it in Terminator 2 for the Kyle Reese character to stay fresh in our minds as a noble character, right? So why did we need that bullshit in Terminator Dark Fate? Why did we have to like show the mother-daughter relationship between the young girl, Danny Ramos, and Grace's character? Why did they have to show that in the future? It was so stupid.
It didn't matter.
And then, I mean, why did they give her cornrows? What the fuck was that? Like, cornrow Danny Ramos? Like, that doesn't even make sense. What the fuck? And why did they just use a different girl? Although, it did occur to me why they did it. Recently, it occurred to me why they didn't use a different actor, because it really isn't that much further in the future. The movie Dark Fate takes place maybe a year or two before the shit hits the fan, right? So what we're seeing is the Mackenzie Davis character, Grace, shortly after the shit hits the fan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably only a year or two after this film. That's why she still looks the same. That makes kind of sense, right?
Because
remember in the end of the film, her and Sarah Connor roll up in the Jeep and they're watching her with her parents, and she looks exactly the same age as she did in the post-apocalyptic future.
Right, right.
So we're like, oh shit, we're butted right up against the new Judgment Day.
That makes sense.
You know?
Yeah.
But still, it was like, it bothered me that they felt they needed to show that. And then the whole, like, this is what they want us to do. This is exactly what they want us to be, fighting each other. I was like, what the fuck? Where did this movie just go? Like, this is completely unnecessary. This movie was badass all the way up to this moment. And now all of a sudden, like, the fuck?
Yeah.
They could just left that out.
Well, you know what? Before I go on to my next main puzzle piece, I do want to kind of just piggyback right off what you were just talking about there and just bring up the first two Terminators. You were mainly talking about Terminator 3, Salvation, and Genesis. But I mean, absolutely, Terminator 1 and 2 as well. I mean, it's still the future sending back a Terminator to protect the savior thing. And I mean, that whole plot is basically the same still. And I think they can't seem to get away from that plot. You know, they just need to keep regurgitating that same plot, unfortunately.
Right. Which, you know, to be fair,
I guess that lends to the reboot thing.
It does. And, you know, I tried to think about that. Like, how could they make this different? And it always leads back to, how do we get something from the future to show up in the past where, like, because the character always has to be like, what the fuck? They have to be outmatched by this future technology that it's like, what the fuck do we do?
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's like, oh, all I got to do is just turn off their Wi-Fi signal. Dead, you know, like if it was something from today, right?
Right.
So I think that's really where it harms it. However, if those three movies between it didn't exist, nobody would give a shit about the fact that it's the same thing again, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, how would you fix that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Terminator from the future coming back to the past to kill somebody.
Especially when you consider that my least favorite Terminator movie, Salvation, does get rid of that whole, you know, that whole thing and does its own story, its own plot. And I hated it so much. So it's like, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't for the writers of this thing. I think it really just comes down to it being a really great story structure to create for a time travel thing. I mean, it just kind of works, sending yourself back to protect yourself, you know?
Right. To
sending your own savior back to protect yourself.
Which is weird because the Kyle Reese loop is a little different too, because Grace is not the father or the mother of Ramos's child, right?
Right.
Whereas Reese had to come back in time to protect Sarah Connor.
Mm-hmm.
He had to come back in time to create the guy who could send him back in time.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, oh shit, what? if John Connor dies, then he never sends Kyle Reese back.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Reese never comes back. Sarah Connor's dead. there's a paradox there that's just like, oh, fuck, it'll fuck you up. Which also brings to light the multiverse theory.
Well, especially when you get into Terminator 3 and, you know, forward from there, because we have the multiverse. We're seeing it in all of these different things.
Yeah, it's fun to be able to write them off that way. I think it was clever. It was better for them to not send back some sort of like, this person gives birth to this person, gives birth to that person, and then sends them back to give birth to them or some shit. I'm glad they didn't do that. I'm also glad that they didn't use Danny Ramos as a fucking womb.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, this girl is a womb. No, this girl is a future badass too. She's not just Mary, mother of Jesus here. She is a future soldier that
exactly
is necessary to... saving the world, although that's a problem that I have had with all of them.
Sure.
Is that if John Connor's so special, then why does any of that shit happen anyway? You know what I mean? Like, what future is he really saving?
Fate.
Like, he's not really saving anything. It's an awful future. You look at it and it sucks. And then he dies in it.
Yeah.
And they killed John Connor off in Terminator 3, man.
Sure.
They fucking killed him in T3. They sent the Arnold back that killed John Connor. Which is interesting that they did this in, that's another thing they borrowed, right?
Yeah.
Arnold killed John Connor in T3. We never saw it, but the one that killed him was sent back. The one that killed him was sent back as a nice guy to protect him again or whatever.
It's all over the place.
It is.
Well, I'm going to go with another puzzle piece while we're at it. And that is the reboot of Ghostbusters.
Okay.
The all-lady Ghostbusters from Paul Feig. And the reason for this is not so much the movie itself. I'm not going to point to the fact that there's, you know, mainly female heroes here and that whole thing. But more so... the reaction to that, the whole where we're at now with society with incels and all that shit, and everybody complaining and getting angry on the internet and all that, and just being monsters
About flipping the cast from male to female or from white to black or from
all of that,
right?
All of the above. And the reaction to that, I think this movie in some ways is James Cameron and Tim Miller saying, fuck these people.
Mm.
You know, we're going to do it with Terminator. We're going to do it twice as hard.
I hope so.
That's
an interesting one. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Ghostbusters, it does have a similar thing. Although, interestingly enough, I don't know if it was just from the almost universal disinterest in the film.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really see anybody going, oh, Jesus. Oh, it's all girls now. Oh, a girl, John Connor or whatever. I didn't really hear a lot of bickering about it either because people were disinterested in the film, or maybe it's starting to have the effect on people, or, you know, starting to work.
Hopefully.
You know, doing that, it's starting to like get people used to it and not be pricks about it, you
right?
Know? Like,
exactly.
I don't really know. I don't really look at it that way. I just look at things like, oh, I like the actors that they picked for this.
Absolutely.
You know, like with Ghostbusters, I like all of those actors. I thought that it was going to suck because it's Ghostbusters.
Right,
like,
right.
How could they possibly make another good one? Like, I don't fucking think they can. I feel bad for Reitman's kid. Jason Reitman working on Ghostbusters 2020. That movie's going to suck.
It's going to be a disaster.
It's going to be fucking awful. It's going to be like when I heard kind of the synopsis that they were floating around for Goonies 2.
Mm.
They were contemplating calling it Groonies.
Because they're grown-ups?
No.
Oh.
But that's, geez, God damn it. No, because what it revolves around is Data from the original film has like a tech store, right? He has a technology store that all of these little kids in Astoria hang around, and he refers to them as the Groonies.
Oh.
And I was like, you've got to be shitting me. They're going to fucking just totally like stereotype. They're going to name it after the way an Asian person speaks English. Like, oh yeah, that's really good. That's a great move there. Good fucking, what the fuck?
You can't do
I know. Maybe that's why Groonies 2 has stopped production. Like, we haven't heard much about it in a while, you know? The kids are like, why do you call us Groonies? You know, and then you're going to slowly meet the other characters or whatever, but...
That's problematic.
I could definitely see, because that was how they were thinking of making Goonies 2, was kind of like a soft reboot of the series using the, some of the original characters as older characters, maybe the parents or some shit. But oh my God, dude, there's no way they can do it and bring back like Corey Feldman. Get
right.
the fuck out of here. If Corey Feldman is in Goonies 2, I am not going to see it.
You're
going to
see it.
No, I'll see it. I'm not going to see it. I'll wait till that shit comes on Netflix or whatever right. and watch that shit on Netflix. I will make sure that it has less than a stellar opening weekend. That's for sure. There's no fucking way I would go see a Corey Feldman Goonies 2. In fact, I probably wouldn't go see a Goonies 2, but it's hard to say. I'm a grown-ass man now. There aren't like children actors that I'm like, oh my God, I got to see that.
Right.
Same with Stranger Things. That show is basically the Goonies.
Right.
Although it's not half as good. You know, it's not even half as good. Everyone likes Stranger Things because of the nostalgia. They don't like it because it's a great story. It's fucking dumb. They've been telling the same stupid story for three seasons now. You know right. what I mean? Like, oh, this person has magic powers and she can keep the hole closed. Like, better keep your hole closed, 11. What?
No.
11, close the hole. What are you doing? 11, get over here. We need you to close the hole. We need you to close that vagina on the wall, 11, please. No. Use your magic head powers to close the wall vagina. I had one more puzzle piece. It was a minor piece. It was a minor piece. It was more of a reverse meta piece. Interestingly, after watching Dark Fate, I decided to go back in time and kind of discover Mackenzie Davis because, as I said, everyone's like, oh my gosh, she's going to be really good in this. I'm like, who the fuck is she? She played a cyborg hooker in Blade Runner 2049 for like 5 seconds. You know?
I didn't even know she was in that.
Yeah, she was one of the replicant prostitutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I mean, she was cute and all. But what I didn't know is that she does actually have a pretty decent back catalog. There was one in particular, it's streaming on Netflix called Halt and Catch Fire. She plays a coder, Cameron Howe, which is interesting because she plays a coder in the 1983, I believe is when it starts, where, you know, there's kind of a tech world already in existence, but they're kind of placing her there. I wouldn't say they're like Forrest Gumping her into these situations, but they're kind of placing her at the forefront of, say, the creation of the internet, the creation of online gaming. The second season jumps forward a little bit to 1985. There's a whole entire episode called Extract and Defend, which it's really interesting because I don't know. I want to say this show came out in 2017 or 2016. I don't know when this episode came out, but it was years before she was cast as the Grace character in Terminator Dark Fate. That's for fucking damn sure. Mm. Right. But the whole episode Extract and Defend takes place in 1985. It's filled with Terminator references. There's a scene where at first I thought it was just going to be a quick subtle, like, oh, that's cool. But the whole fucking episode is like Terminator referenced, right? Where she mentions how a Terminator is going to come back in time to save Sarah Connor or whatever. Hmm. And that came out of her mouth, which is interesting because her character's name is Cameron. James Cameron directed Terminator, right?
Yeah.
Here she is basically describing her character in Dark Fate.
Hmm.
Right? Talking about Kyle Reese going back in time to save Sarah Connor. She is the Kyle Reese character who goes back in time to save the Sarah Connor character in Dark Fate. And she, you know, even utters like the line, I'll be back in it. And like, you know, even the video cassette for Terminator shows up in the episode.
Yeah.
Like they're all watching Terminator. So Terminator is just like scattered throughout this episode, Extract and Defend, which is basically her MO in Dark Fate.
Yeah, yeah.
To extract her from the fucking factory and defend her from the Rev 9.
Hell yeah.
So it's just really interesting. Like I was like, holy shit, that's really kind of cool. Like they, I don't know if that informed her character, but I'm almost certain that when somebody was like, you're going to be in Terminator, or when she was on the set of Terminator or whatever, she had to have thought back to this episode.
Sure, yeah.
Where she probably had to watch Terminator or whatever so she could reference it in the show or whatever, you know? And like she has lines, whole lines where she's mentioning the plot of Terminator in the show, which, you know, might be a little problematic that they have a copy of Terminator and everyone knows it so well.
Right. It was already still like, just a little.
Right. It was a small movie and I probably didn't even see Terminator until after I saw Terminator 2.
Yeah, I don't think I did either, actually, come to think of it. But yeah, I mean, I've heard great things about this show, though.
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I should check it out one of these days, because she is really good.
That's another thing that I had to mention was watching her in this show, not only is she very good in it, but it's a completely different character from the Grace character in Terminator,
right?
Which just showed to me how much range she has, not just as an actor, but I mean, like I said, she just kicks ass in Terminator Dark Fate.
Yeah.
So not only is she a new, entirely different character, but she also got the physical part down where, like,
yeah,
you know, she just looks like a fucking militant badass, where in Halt and Catch Fire, she's just like a programmer kind of punk rock schlep.
They're probably going to drag her into a Fast and Furious after this.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, she's got the training now, so they might as well. Yeah.
Right.
She'll have fun. Well, I'm going to do the finished puzzle, and then we'll get into any closing thoughts we have about this movie. Finished puzzle includes The Force Awakens, Halloween, Uncharted 3, The Mummy, Fast and Furious 7, I think it was, Mission Impossible Fallout, Hobbs and Shaw, all of the previous Terminator movies, Ghostbusters, and Halt and Catch Fire. You know, first closing thought I had was earlier this year, Stallone with Rambo Last Blood had to go in and out of Mexico and deal with the border and all that stuff.
Oh, okay,
and
yeah.
I just thought it was funny that both Stallone and Schwarzenegger are back this year with movies where they have to go in and out of Mexico.
In and out of Mexico.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about Dark Fate was it felt like Southern California or something. Like, where are they? Like, in fact, they almost had to explain to you that they were in Mexico.
Yeah.
But that's also because they were at, and this is very common down there, but they were at an American factory in Mexico.
Mm.
And if you didn't really notice that that's what was going on, they made her boss a very Anglo-American boss. If you remember
right.
her boss, remember like she goes to the boss and
he's
just like this white dude who's like, does not speak a lick of Spanish. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, what? So, yeah, I mean, it's weird that they definitely messaged a little bit, but I don't think that it was messaging like trying to make a point as much as it was, this is where we are at this in this part of the world at this point in time in our history. And that's it.
Yeah.
I really don't think that, even like with the border thing and like the people in cages and shit at the border, I don't think it was so much them trying to message about that.
Right.
As it was, well, what would be going on right here at this time?
Yeah.
And, oh, wow, we could set it in there and that could be like a really good like backdrop for this. Plus, I mean, if you think about it, it really served to like kind of trap the characters up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like here are these Mexican nationals that are trying to cross the border, you know, and clearly they have a really good fucking reason to be doing it.
Sure.
No, you don't understand. There's a machine that's chasing me. Like, okay, get the fuck in the cage.
Yeah. Real quick, speaking of that machine chasing them, we didn't really talk about the bad guy enough. I think we should talk about him for a minute. I wish they went into more detail about him and his character, like what his whole thing is. I said it to you after we watched the movie about, I didn't even realize it while watching it. It wasn't until after the fact that his like upgrade this time around was being more personable and being able to fit in with people.
Sure, sure.
I think that's really interesting and it could have been explored so much better.
You know, I think they nailed it. And the only reason why I think they nailed it is because you and I both recognized that he was more personable, right?
Right, right.
Especially in the scene where he walks up to the two cowboys and he, you know, like you mentioned the two tours in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
But the whole thing where he's like, oh man, you better believe I was praying.
Yeah.
I was praying as hard as I could, boys. And they were like, ah, amen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's all right,
just like,
brother.
Right, all right, brother. And then he's like, hey, by the way, you know where I can get myself a helicopter? It's just like, yeah. I feel you there. I liked that he was two separate entities that they had to like kind of compete against. And you did notice also, I did anyway, that when they were separate, they were weaker. Right. Yeah. Where it wasn't like, oh, he's two badasses now. No, he was like a lot more vulnerable as two. He needed to be separate so that he could try to do two things at once or whatever, right. But he was way more vulnerable.
I got to say that is, and I was going to come up with some puzzle pieces for this, but that is such a video game thing. Mm. You know, there's so many, like there's so many video games where like you can, you know, do something like totally unreal like that, like create a second one of yourself, but then you're leaving yourself vulnerable when you're doing it or something right. like that, you know?
It's really upsetting that we're probably never going to get another Terminator movie or we will get one that is completely unrelated and it's like a TV show on the WB or some shit, or I don't know, who owns this, Fox?
Yeah, Fox.
This is a Disney film?
Yeah.
So we'll get something on the Disney Plus, you know, and it's going to be as shitty as the Sarah Connor Chronicles, because I tried to watch that. It was garbage.
I never even bothered.
Some people are like, oh my God, I liked all the actors in it.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a shit story. I thought it was shitty, like how they tried to make it work. It
it's hard to do action sci-fi as just like a TV show. It's got to be big.
Right,
know?
Right. You know, you have to have the budget of a streaming network. You have to have the budget of The Mandalorian, or you have to have a budget of Star Trek Discovery. Multiple millions of dollars spent on an episode. You know, like it's not like a Next Generation budget. It's like a film budget. I can't remember Mandalorian or something like $15 million an episode.
I'm not sure.
I don't think that they spend $15 million an episode. I just think that what they do is they take the total budget and divide it by how many episodes.
Sure.
I think that show has 8 episodes. Yeah. It's not quite as big of a budget as say $150 million on a 2-hour movie. No, because TV, I mean, a lot of that is just like filling in gaps.
Right.
You know, like you write a movie. And then you can just lengthen it in between to cut it into episodes. But yeah, I don't know. Where did we leave off?
No, we're just on closing thoughts.
The Gabriel Luna character?
Yeah.
he was good.
Yeah.
He was good in it. They showed a few things about the time travel that made it a little different. In the original ones, the time travel is hot. Time travel melts everything around it.
Oh, sure. Now it's
right?
cold. Right?
Now it's cold. It freezes everything around it. Yeah. So in the original films, like may or may not get it so much in the first film, but in the second one, in T2, when you get that like spherical cutout of the side of the truck, remember where he appears at the truck stop or whatever, the T-1000 appears behind the fence and like it totally melted, took out that whole part of the truck in the shape of the globe that he was in, right? And then I want to say it was T3. I can't remember which one it was, but like the ground was like spherical, like melted away.
Right.
Time travel was always like hot.
Mm-hmm.
And in this film, it was cold. And it wasn't just cold like, oh, I'm assuming, like Back to the Future, like, oh, there was ice on it. But they went out of their way to show that both of them, when they came back to our time, it caused like some sort of freeze zone. Like that clothesline that they showed, which that was a weird choice to make. Like, they're so bizarre how they did that.
It was very strange.
But it like froze the clothesline, and then the clothesline fell and kind of shattered or whatever. They changed the physics of time travel a little bit.
I have to assume that's just, Legion decided to do that.
Yeah, that's Legion's version of time travel.
Yeah, they programmed their own version or whatever, and that's just how it goes.
Well, do you think that time travel is something that only machine AI is able to create?
I think yes, actually, because most likely we're not going to be able to do it on our own. Maybe it'll be in tandem. Maybe we'll work together on it, but definitely I think AI is going to be involved when we finally get there. Did you expect me to answer that question?
No, not at all. Yeah. I was hoping you pull the Dave Rosen. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. I really don't know. That's a good.
Well, just real quick, and then we'll wrap up. But I mean, we already kind of touched on it just a minute ago. But what do you think the future of this series? Like, do you think there's a chance that we'll get a? I mean. They're not going to continue this. They planned on this being a three movie arc. It's not going to happen.
Right. And
do you think it's going to reboot completely? Like you said, maybe a TV show, or
that's where I see it going.
Yeah.
I see a future where, maybe it won't happen for a while. Right. How old is Schwarzenegger? 72 or something. Right. Yeah.
Well, I had said if this
he'll
had
be
done
dead
well,
before they make another one.
Yeah,
I think.
Definitely. I think if this had done well, they would have CGI'd the shit out of him to the point where they can make 50 more Terminators with him. Forever.
I think that's where it's going. It's either going to be an animated show entirely, or it's going to be like a CG animated show, or it's going to be so far in the future that the real Arnold's dead and his estate is like just like. Yeah, oh, yeah. Just crank out this bullshit.
But this shows that no one wants it, though. That's the thing.
I don't think so.
It flopped. It's going to lose like almost $100 million.
This shows that nobody wants a 70-year-old Arnold Terminator. Yeah, for sure. Because if you watch the trailer, it's like, oh, look, Arnold's back and he's 72.
Right.
What? That doesn't make sense. Oh, look, Sarah Connor's back and she's 69. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool, I guess. Although, hey, man, they fucking killed it on that.
Yeah.
1996 Sarah Connor, didn't they?
She looked good.
All of that, they've got that tech down. I'm one of the few people I know who was entirely satisfied with Peter Cushing appearing in Rogue One. Everyone's like, oh man, he looked fake. I'm like, fuck you. He looked incredible. The only thing that looked a little weird was like the mouth, maybe, you know, like it just like moves a little funky, but come on, man. All they got to do is iron that shit out and it's,
who else
legit
do you want them to bring back? They're bringing back James Dean now.
James Dean, I wouldn't mind in the future, like when I'm 50, I wouldn't mind seeing a young Bruce Willis show back up in some shit. You know what I mean? But who else would I want him to bring back? I mean, I don't know. Like young Lindsay Wagner. I mean, I don't know. I really don't fucking know. Who would I want to bring back? Young Jane Fonda. Things like that. I could see them bringing back classic film characters, but I don't think it's going to be as ubiquitous as we think, right?
No.
I think really what it boils down to is how much those actors were the character. It's going to be movies like that, right? I don't think we're going to see a bunch of Jane Fonda movies because I can't really think of, unless they remake Barbarella in 2037.
Right.
And they're like, let's just do a CG Jane Fonda. Fuck it.
Maybe Ford for like Indiana Jones or something. No.
I really don't see that happening because I don't think that's necessary.
It's like, all about Schwarzenegger.
Right. Schwarzenegger is the Terminator for sure. Schwarzenegger is the fucking Terminator. I could only see them bringing back characters if they need to supplement a story in the timeline that story happened. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the Peter Cushing in Star Wars thing, right? Where it's sort of about the Death Star plans, or it is about the Death Star plans. And as we know, he was the leader of the Death Star, you know what I mean? Like he was the Grand Moff of that plan. So if he's not in it, this movie's going to be a little weird, right?
Right.
So what do we do? Well, let's put him in it and just CG his face a little bit. Kind of like they have so far in Terminator, man. I mean, if you think about it, like the action and speaking and stuff is all done by 70-year-old Arnold.
Right.
Not it's not really done by a CG Arnold. There's some CG Arnold that's like that, but it's not, you know, as soon as the action happens, they kind of fucking cut away from his head. Like it's not super CG Arnold through the whole thing, right? In the flashback John Connor death sequence, that was another actor entirely, and then they CG'd the Arnold face over him.
Sure.
Similar to Genesis, when they went back and you know, your clothes, your boots, give them to me, you know? They pulled the same thing in Salvation where he goes in and they find the factory where they're making them and then he comes out.
That was the guy from Son of the Beach, I think. And then they put Arnold's face on him or something.
I don't see them doing that as much as we anticipate them doing that, right? Right. So are they going to CG people's faces in shit? I don't know. James Dean, that's something else. I know that there's an uproar about that, but that is not going to be successful. And then it will flop and then we'll not make another one.
Yeah.
Right. And the truth is, it's like, fuck James Dean, man. Fuck James Dean. And even fuck Marlon Brando. Fuck all of those assholes.
Yeah.
Like, they're important, but they're not important enough to keep fucking bringing them back. That's the past of filmmaking. Like, the future of filmmaking should be much bigger, much better than that, right? We don't need these old, crusty fucking...
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's... That was like Actol, you know? Like, now it's just like fucking people playing real people, you know?
Exactly.
And that's... We don't need more of that old shit anymore. Dare I bring up the Scorsese thing, you know, where... You know, he's trying to make these movies where it's just real people and real situations, and fucking the studio system's like, fuck you. We're going to make these hyper realistic films that are just cookie cutter fucking whatever. And hey, we love them. I love them. I go watch that shit. They're not my favorite thing in the world. I don't own the Avengers collection or anything, but I will watch every single one of them.
Sure.
I'm so glad that Dark Fate, even though it was directed by the same guy who did
Deadpool.
Yeah. I'm so glad it was not like Deadpool.
Yeah.
Because Deadpool just was like way fucking just too much. Like, oh,
well, it is what it is.
It's obnoxious as fuck.
It's very obnoxious on purpose, you know.
Right. I guess Deadpool is that character.
Yeah. It's interesting that they got him to do this because, I mean, it's nothing like the Deadpool movies.
No. And that, well, he only did the first one.
Right.
And that's all he did.
Yeah.
He's directed two fucking movies and one TV show and that's it.
Yeah.
I looked him up and he writes like title sequences and shit. Like, oh, he's the guy who put together the Thor Dark World title sequence. Fucking let's give him $140 million to make a Terminator movie.
Smart idea.
Yeah. It should be very successful. Why did it fail? I don't know. You gave it to a director who's never directed a fucking movie before, maybe. I don't know. Like, or directed one movie that it was successful because it was a Marvel movie that was rated R. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting... Okay.
So
we got to go.
Looks like we got to wrap up.
The library is giving me the alligator hands, crocodile hands shut my mouth.
You want to tell people where they can find Black Camaro's new album real quick?
Oh, yeah. You can find it at blackcamaromusic.com, Protocol of Dreams on vinyl. You know what I'm saying? This is a Terminator future.
That's right.
Vinyl and digis.
There you go. Go check that album.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Dave.
All right.
Sound and Vision is the name, with movie trivia being the game. The theme-based weekly wonder where you, yes, you the listener, can play along by guessing the films we're throwing at you by deciphering our cryptic clues. Join us while we break down movies in a way that only me and my weekly guests can. Come and find us on all platforms which podcasts are available and get your pop culture fix.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Terminator Dark Fate with Brian Garth. And like I said, Brian edited that one. So if he inserted any little messages or anything like that, I have no idea what he did. I haven't even listened back to it yet. I just inserted it into the file here in the project, jumped to the end, and now I'm talking. So I have no idea what it sounds like. I'm sure it sounds great. Brian is a professional. So we'll get him back on the show one of these days soon. We're actually overdue for going to a movie. There's got to be something coming up we can go see. Anyway, this is January 2020. We've got a whole bunch of these in the can episodes that we are fitting into the schedule now that they're hitting VOD. We had Jojo Rabbit. We have Jay and Silent Bob reboot and Parasite. So we've got all these movies that are just coming out on VOD that we are releasing the episodes to correspond with that. But we will be getting into some new 2020 releases soon. So make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can, of course, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. We'd love to know what you're thinking of the show. So please do that. Of course, 5 stars is the best. So especially do that. If you're thinking about reviewing us and you're like, yeah, I'm going to review them, but it's going to be like a 2 or 3 star... You could do it. I mean, I do want to see your reviews, but, you know, you don't have to. You can skip that one. But 5 stars, we'd love your reviews. Thank you so much. So let's shout out real quick before we close this thing up. Awesome Movie Year, Bird Road, and All Rice, No Beans. All Rice, No Beans, of course, is the new podcast that I'm producing. I'm not sure when this one's going up, but we're a few episodes in at this point, so there's a bunch of All Rice, No Beans for you to check out and really get a feel for the show. Go check out All Rice, No Beans wherever you listen to Piecing It Together. It's a great new show about restaurants. Also, Awesome Movie Year is into its season 3 on the films of 1989, so check out Awesome Movie Year. And Bird Road is back. Me and my buddy Q talking about politics and culture. And lately we've been talking about movies a lot because Q has realized that it's impossible to get me to pay attention to what's happening in the world. So we have been squeezing in a lot of movie talk in there as well. So go check out Bird Road. We got a live show coming up February 17th at the Golden Tiki. So we'll have more info about that soon. But check out Bird Road. So all that on the All Points West podcast network. And of course, Entre Dos as well, Q's wife's show. So we have all these podcasts for you. Please go check them out. Check out Brian Garth's band, Black Camaro. I love Black Camaro, and I actually listen to them all the time. So go check them out. They're available on Spotify and iTunes and all that stuff. So that about does it for today. Let's play some big electronic type track for you to go along with Terminator Dark Fate, something with Skynet or whatever the hell it was called. What was it, Legion? I already forget. This movie's like half out of my brain already. Something with the robots taking over. Why don't we play the track, Dark Fate? Let's play the track Dark Rain from my album Echoes in the Dark. It was the first track on my first album. This is a good fit for this movie. So this is the track Dark Rain. Enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming out real soon. Thank you.
and all points west.